Have you ever spent like weeks or maybe even months carefully researching keywords and writing the absolute perfect blog post or service
Yeah,
page?
I'm sure a lot of people listening have.
Right. You hit publish, you wait, and well, absolutely nothing happens. It just vanishes into the Google void.
Yeah, it's brutal.
And meanwhile, you're watching a competitor's completely mediocre page rank number one. You're just sitting there staring at your screen, wondering, what is going on?
It is an incredibly frustrating experience. And I mean, it's one that businesses, whether they're small local shops or massive enterprise operations, pour thousands of dollars into every single year.
Exactly.
Usually they try to solve it by just creating more and more content, just hoping something eventually sticks.
Yeah, the brute force method. But today's deep dive is going to look at exactly why that brute force content strategy is failing.
It really is failing for a lot of people.
It is. So we are pulling from a really eye-opening guide published in March 2026 by the Technigian team. It's titled Fixing the Code: 10 Technical SEO Killers for Businesses.
It's a great read.
Yeah, and our mission today is to prove that for a lot of you listening out there, the problem isn't your content at all. The problem is, well, it's the code running underneath it.
And the data backing this up is staggering. I mean, it paints a picture of a systemic failure in how websites are being managed.
It really does.
Yeah.
Listen to these stats from the source material. 90% of audited websites have at least one critical technical issue that is silently killing their rankings.
90%, that's almost everybody.
Right. On top of that, 67% of in-house SEO programs say non-SEO developer tasks are their biggest barrier to success.
Meaning just getting the engineering team to actually fix the broken code.
Exactly. And when you add all that up across the industry, according to SEO Clarity, it translates to an estimated $35.9 million in lost annual revenue.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a massive invisible leak in the bucket.
What's fascinating here is the core philosophy that the Technigian guide outlines to address this. It all comes down to the fact that technical SEO is the foundation of everything else you do online.
The absolute bedrock.
Right. You could literally have the greatest, most informative, most engagingly written content in the world. But if Google's automated systems cannot find it, or if they cannot understand it,
Or if they don't trust it.
exactly. If they don't trust the website delivering it, that content is never going to rank. Full stop.
Right. You can't win a race if you don't even show up to the starting line.
Yeah.
And I think that brings us to the first major hurdle of this entire process.
The discovery phase.
Yeah. Before Google can even begin to judge how good your content is, it actually has to find it and render it on the screen. So let's talk about the digital bouncers that are blocking the door to your website.
That's a good way to put it. The journey of a web page starts with a crawler, which is basically a bot deployed by Google to scan the internet.
Okay.
If Google's crawler cannot reach your pages, those pages cannot rank. I mean, it sounds wildly obvious, but the source notes that this is shockingly common.
Like, how common are we talking?
Very. For instance, developers often use a misconfigured robots.txt file.
Okay, a robots.txt file is basically it's a set of instructions for search engines, right?
Precisely. It tells crawlers what they're allowed to look at. So when a website is in a staging environment, meaning developers are actively building it behind the scenes, they intentionally put a block in that file.
Because they don't want search engines indexing a half-finished site.
Right, exactly. But then the site goes live and someone simply forgets to remove that block.
So they literally leave a giant do not enter sign on the front door of a live website, and
Yes.
then they wonder why they have zero traffic.
Exactly. Or on a more granular level, they might accidentally leave a Noindex tag buried in the HTML of a specific, highly valuable service page.
Oh, that hurts.
It does. Another massive roadblock to discovery is what we call orphan pages. These are pages that exist on your server, but there are absolutely no internal links pointing to them from your homepage or menus.
So they're just floating out there.
Yeah. A crawler navigates the web by following links, just like a car follows roads. If you build a house with no roads leading to it, no one is ever going to find it.
Okay, let's unpack this because there's another major layer to this discovery phase
Yeah.
that the guide highlights. And it has to do with how modern websites are actually built.
Right, the JavaScript issue.
Yeah. A lot of sites today use JavaScript frameworks like React, Angular, or Vue. And they rely on something called client-side rendering.
Which is a huge shift from how things used to be.
So tell me if this analogy works. Relying on client-side rendering is like building a gorgeous, incredibly detailed storefront, but putting a one-way mirror where the display window should be.
Okay, I like where this is going.
Like we, the human users, yeah. can look out and see everything perfectly. But Google is standing on the sidewalk and just sees a blank wall.
That is an excellent way to visualize it.
Yeah.
With client-side rendering, your server is essentially sending Google a blank page with a bundle of JavaScript code attached.
Just a bundle of code.
Yeah, expecting Google's bot to run that code to actually build the page.
So it's like shipping Google a flat pack box from IKEA and saying, here, you build the furniture.
That's spot on. And the problem is purely based on computing resources.
Because there's a lot of internet out there.
Exactly. Google can build that IKEA furniture. They can render JavaScript. But it takes a massive amount of computing power to do so across billions of pages.
So what do they do?
They deprioritize it. They put your flat pack box in a corner. It might take days or even weeks for Google to finally get around to rendering and indexing it.
Wow.
Or worse, critical content might never get indexed at all.
And the rules around this just got even stricter, didn't they? The guide mentions a December 2025 update.
They did. Google clarified their stance. If your pages return non-200 status codes, meaning they don't load cleanly and immediately the exact moment the crawler arrives, they might be excluded from the rendering queue entirely.
Wait, entirely? So Google is basically saying, we don't have time to assemble this if the instructions aren't perfect.
Exactly. They just drop it.
So I'm struggling to picture the solution here. If a business has a site built on these modern frameworks, mm-hmm. do they have to scrap it and rebuild the whole thing from scratch?
Not necessarily rebuild, no. But they have to change how it is served to the crawler. The guide highly recommends implementing server-side rendering, or SSR.
Okay, what does that change?
Well, instead of sending Google the flat pack box, your server does the heavy lifting. It builds the HTML fully, it assembles the chair, sticking with the analogy, and then sends that finished, instantly readable page to Google.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. And the easiest way for you listening to check if you have a problem here is to use Google Search Console's URL inspection tool.
Because that shows you exactly what Google sees.
Right. It will show you the page exactly as Google's bot sees it. If your critical text is missing in that tool, Google does not know it exists.
Wow. Okay. So let's say we fix that. We've taken down the Noindex tags, we've built roads to our orphan pages, and we're using server-side rendering.
Sounds good so far.
Google has finally walked through the front door. We're good, right? Well, no. Because if the experience inside the store is agonizingly slow, or if the aisles are completely broken when you try to walk through them on your phone, Google is going to bounce right back out.
Which brings us to the next critical phase, the need for speed and mobile parity.
Right.
In 2026, Google's core web vitals are stricter than they have ever been. They aren't just suggestions anymore. They are confirmed ranking factors.
Let's talk about these metrics, because honestly, they sound like a foreign language if you aren't a developer.
They really do, but we can break them down. The biggest update for 2026 is INP, which stands for Interaction to Next Paint.
Okay.
This measures responsiveness. When a user clicks a button or taps a menu or types in a search bar, how long does it take for the website to actually visually respond?
And what's the target there?
Google's target for INP is under 200 milliseconds.
Whoa.
Then you have LCP, largest contentful paint, which measures how fast the main biggest piece of content on your screen loads. That must be under 2.5 seconds.
Okay, that one sounds a bit more reasonable.
And finally, CLS, cumulative layout shift, which measures visual stability. You know when you're reading an article and suddenly an ad loads and the whole page jumps down?
Oh, I hate that. It's the worst.
Exactly. That's a layout shift. And Google wants that metric under 0.1, which basically means zero jumping around.
Okay, wait. I have to push back on this INP metric for a second. 200 milliseconds.
Yes.
That is literally the blink of an eye. Are users and algorithms really abandoning a website over a 200 millisecond delay? I mean, is Google just being totally unreasonable here?
It sounds absurdly fast, I agree. But you have to think about user psychology today.
Yeah.
In a world of infinite choices, milliseconds equal friction. If you tap an add to cart button on your phone and there is a tiny perceptible lag before the cart updates, your brain subconsciously registers that the site is broken.
Or untrustworthy.
Exactly. And the business impact is very real. The source states that every single second of overall load time delay drops conversions by approximately 7%.
7% per second. Okay, yeah, that hurts. So what are the mechanics behind these delays? What is actually bogging these sites down so much?
The usual suspects are massive, uncompressed images. We often see businesses uploading 2 to 5 megabyte hero images straight from a camera.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you can't do that.
No, those should be compressed down to maybe 100 or 200 kilobytes using modern formats like WebP. Another massive speed killer is not using a CDN or content delivery network.
Wait, before we move on, what exactly is a CDN in plain English?
Sure, think of it like a global pizza franchise.
I love pizza.
Right. If you run a single pizzeria in New York and someone in Tokyo orders a pizza, it's going to take a long time to deliver it, and it will probably be cold.
Very cold.
The internet has physical limitations based on the speed of light and fiber optic cables. A CDN puts a kitchen in every major city. It stores copies of your website's heaviest files, like images and videos, on servers physically closer to the user.
So a user in Tokyo downloads the images from a server in Tokyo, not New York.
Ah, exactly. That makes perfect sense.
And the guide also mentions lazy loading as a fix. How does that actually work under the hood?
Normally, when someone visits a web page, the browser tries to download every single piece of content from top to bottom before it considers the page ready.
Which takes forever if it's a long page.
Right. Lazy loading changes that instruction. It tells the browser, only load the images that are currently visible on the screen right now.
Well, smart.
Yeah, it says hold off on loading that massive photo at the very bottom of the page until the user actually scrolls down to it. It saves a tremendous amount of initial load time.
Brilliant. And we also have to talk about how all of this looks on a phone, because the source highlights that missing content on your mobile site is a massive killer.
Huge.
And this is vital because in 2026, Google exclusively evaluates the mobile version of your site for rankings. Like, desktop indexing is just dead.
Exactly dead. And a lot of web designers want mobile sites to look sleek and clean.
Sure, you don't want it cluttered.
Right. So to save space on a small screen, they hide important text behind tabs, they use drop-down accordions, or they just remove whole sections of text entirely.
To delete it.
Yeah. Or maybe the company even uses a totally separate URL for mobile users.
But if they do that, because Google is only looking at the mobile site, they are basically deleting that content from Google's brain.
That is exactly what is happening. If text, internal links, or structured data are visible on your desktop site but hidden on your mobile site, they are effectively invisible to the algorithm.
So what's the fix?
The fix here is to always use responsive design. That's where the exact same HTML code is serving all devices, and it just rearranges itself to fit the screen. You must ensure your mobile experience has full parity with your desktop experience.
All right, so let's recap. We have a fast site. It's rendering perfectly. The mobile version is complete. Google's crawler is inside the building and happy.
Getting somewhere.
But once it's inside, how does it know which rooms or which pages are actually important? This brings us to how your site is mapped and wired.
Right. This is where we get into website architecture and internal linking.
Internal linking is huge.
It is. Internal links are how Google discovers relationships and hierarchies between pages. Many businesses suffer from a flat navigation structure.
What does that mean exactly?
Well, they have a link to a generic services page, but then they bury their individual, highly valuable, specialized service pages deep inside submenus that take 4 or 5 clicks to reach.
Oh, I see. So it's basically like walking into a massive multi-story library that has absolutely no Dewey Decimal System, no signs on the walls, and no librarian to guide you.
Exactly. You just wander the aisles hoping you stumble across the right book.
And what happens if you, the listener, have recently redesigned your company's website or moved to a new platform? Like, how does that mess up the architecture?
Oh, that introduces one of the most common and destructive issues, which is broken redirect chains and loops.
Sounds bad.
It is. Over the years, as you move to a new CMS or change a URL, you set up a redirect. But if you aren't careful, URL A redirects to URL B, which later redirects to URL C before finally loading.
But chain. And a loop would be like getting stuck in a traffic roundabout that you can never exit. URL A sends you to B, and B sends you back to A.
That's a perfect visual. The roundabout means the page literally never loads. But even a chain is highly damaging because of something called link equity.
Link equity?
Yeah, think of link equity like water flowing through pipes.
Okay.
It's the SEO value or authority that passes from one page to another.
Okay.
Every time you redirect, you have a joint in the pipe and a little bit of that SEO water leaks out.
I get it.
So a long chain wastes that equity and severely slows down the load time for the user.
The guide also mentions outdated XML sitemaps. Just to clarify, an XML sitemap is basically a master directory map you hand directly to Google, right?
Yes, it's a file that lists every single page you want Google to crawl. The problem is many sites auto-generate this once and never update it.
So it's just full of junk.
Yeah, the map is filled with deleted pages or 404 errors, and this wastes your crawl budget.
Okay, let's define crawl budget, because I think a lot of people assume Google just indexes the whole internet instantly.
They definitely don't. Google has finite server resources. They assign a budget, a limited amount of time and resources they are willing to spend crawling your specific website on any given day.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it was a daily limit.
It is. If you hand them a map filled with fake doors and dead ends, they waste their budget crawling broken pages, and they leave before they ever reach your new important blog post. If we connect this to the bigger picture, all of these architecture issues, the deep menus, the redirect chains, the bad maps, they send a very clear, very negative signal to Google.
Which is what?
If you make Google work hard to find your service pages, Google's algorithm assumes those pages simply aren't important to you.
And if they aren't important to you, Google strips them of their ranking weight.
Exactly. The golden rule here is that every important page must be reachable within 3 clicks from your homepage.
Accessibility equals importance in the eyes of the algorithm.
That's the perfect way to summarize it.
Okay, so we've mapped the building perfectly. Google can navigate the halls without getting stuck in a traffic roundabout. Now the crawler needs to read the signs on the doors to understand exactly what you do.
Right.
And crucially, in 2026, it doesn't just need to understand it for traditional search. It needs to translate that information for AI search engines.
Mm-hmm.
We are dealing with an identity crisis here.
We really are. And the most common form of this identity crisis starts with duplicate content.
Oh, man.
Yeah. When multiple URLs on your site serve the exact same or very similar content, Google has to guess which version is the real one to index.
And I'm guessing it frequently guesses wrong.
It frequently guesses wrong, or it just gets confused and splits your ranking power between the two.
And I have to say, reading this section of the guide was wild. The things that count as duplicate content, it completely blows my mind.
Like what?
Like, Google looks at example.com and www.example.com as two entirely competing websites, or an HTTP version versus the secure HTTPS version.
Yep, those are different sites to Google.
But the craziest one to me was a trailing slash. Wait, you're telling me example.com page and example.com page with a slash at the end are two different websites to Google?
To a human, it's incredibly pedantic. It's the exact same page. But technically, to a server and to a search crawler, a URL with a slash at the end indicates a directory, like a folder.
Okay.
And a URL without a slash indicates a specific file. They're two distinct addresses on the internet.
That is wild.
And if your content management system is allowing the page to load on both addresses, you are literally competing against yourself and splitting your ranking power in half.
That is so frustrating. How do you fix something that pedantic?
You use canonical tags.
Canonical
tag. Yeah, canonical tag is basically a hidden line of code in the HTML that acts as a citation. It tells Google, hey, no matter how many URLs lead to this content, this specific URL is the master copy. Give all the credit to this one.
Oh, that's incredibly useful.
It is. You pair that with 301 redirects, so the non-preferred versions automatically forward the user to the correct one.
Okay, so once we've established the master copy, we have to clearly label what the page is about.
Right.
The guide highlights missing or duplicate title tags and meta descriptions. It notes that title tags, those are the blue links you click on in search results, should be 51 to 60 characters and are still the single strongest on-page ranking signal.
Absolutely true.
And meta descriptions, those little 150 to 160 character summaries underneath, they don't actually rank you directly, but they are crucial because they act as your ad copy. If the description is compelling, people click.
Right, but there is a much deeper layer to identity now, and this is where technical SEO has drastically evolved. We have to talk about schema markup.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because we are moving beyond traditional Google search.
Yes, we are.
How exactly does schema markup act as a translator for an AI platform like ChatGPT or Perplexity or Google's AI Overviews?
It is entirely about how these different systems consume information. Humans read visually.
Right.
We look at a local business page, we see a big bold heading, we see a photo of a storefront, and we use visual context clues to understand, oh, this is a plumber in Costa Mesa, and these numbers in the corner must be their hours.
Yeah, our brains just do that automatically.
Exactly. AI does not have eyes. AI reads structured data.
Okay.
Schema markup is a standardized vocabulary of code. It's a hidden data layer that you add to your site to explicitly spoon-feed facts to an AI.
So instead of making ChatGPT read a conversational paragraph and guess what your business hours are, schema is a rigid format that explicitly says entity, business, type, Plumber, location, Costa Mesa, hours, 9 to 5.
Precisely. You are giving the AI structured data it can instantly digest and trust.
Wow.
In 2026, Schema is no longer an optional add-on. It is the core language that powers AI search.
So you have to have it.
You do. If you want ChatGPT or an AI overview to cite your business as the definitive answer to a user's question, you have to provide them with local business schema, service schema, and FAQ schema.
And if you don't?
If you don't have that code underneath your content, the AI will simply bypass you because you're too hard to read, and it will cite a competitor who spoon-fed it the data.
Pulling this all together, looking at the entire journey, from the crawler hitting the robots.txt file, to rendering the JavaScript, to timing the milliseconds of load speed, to parsing the schema data, it becomes really clear that this isn't a checklist you just hand to a junior developer.
Definitely not.
It is an ecosystem. The Technegian guide refers to it as a compounding effect. If your site has a 3-second load time, plus a chain of broken redirects, plus a missing canonical tag, you aren't dealing with 3 separate minor problems.
No, you're dealing with 1 systemic failure. And trying to spot treat just one of those things while ignoring the foundation isn't going to produce minimal, if any, improvement. It requires a comprehensive technical audit to see how these systems are interacting.
Which, the guide notes, isn't necessarily cheap. A specialized agency like Technegian charges between $2,500 and $7,500 for a deep technical audit.
It's an investment.
It is. But the ROI is the flip side of that equation. Once you fix these foundational code issues, that massive investment you've been making in writing blog posts and generating content finally starts to pay off.
The barrier is removed.
Yeah. And businesses usually see measurable ranking results within 2 to 3 months.
I think the most powerful takeaway from the source material is a quote directly from the Technegian team that summarizes this perfectly.
Oh, let's hear it.
They say, "Most SEO agencies sell you content. We fix the foundation underneath it."
That's a great line.
It is. If the foundation is cracked, everything built on top of it will eventually sink, no matter how beautifully written it is.
So what does this all mean? We just spent this entire deep dive talking about optimizing the invisible layers of website code. We're tweaking 200 milliseconds of load time. We're agonizing over trailing slashes. We're adding hidden schema data layers.
A lot of hidden layers.
Yeah, all so that Google's crawlers and AI bots can read our sites more efficiently. Which makes you wonder, as AI platforms increasingly just browse the web for us, absorbing that structured data and delivering exactly the answers we need directly in a chat interface, will human-readable website design even matter in 10 years?
That's a really profound thought.
Right. Or will websites eventually just become pure, invisible data exchanges between machines with the human interface completely removed?
This raises an incredible question about the future of the internet itself. If the AI is the only one actually visiting the site to extract the data, who are we actually designing those beautiful hero images and drop-down menus for?
Something to ponder next time you're in a meeting, arguing over the color of a checkout button on your homepage. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. And seriously, if you take one thing away from today, go log into your Google Search Console and see what Google actually sees. We'll catch you next time.